What if I told you that in the 1930s, thousands of Americans wore silver shirts emblazoned with scarlet L's, trained with weapons, and prepared for armed insurrection, all while a Catholic priest with 30 million radio listeners praised Hitler? This isn't alternative history or dystopian fiction. It's the buried truth of America's flirtation with fascism, a chapter we've conveniently forgotten but desperately need to remember. While Hitler rose to power in Europe, a parallel movement took root here, funded by Nazi Germany, amplified by members of Congress, and embraced by respected business leaders and intellectuals. We tell ourselves it couldn't happen here, but it already did. Understanding how close we came to losing democracy once might be the only thing that saves it now. George Sylvester Viereck, author of the world's first gay vampire novel and worshiper of Oscar Wilde and Napoleon, became Hitler's most effective American propagandist. His genius wasn't secrecy, but audacity. With Hitler's portrait displayed in his office, Viereck distributed over 1 million leaflets, 2.5 million pamphlets, and 135,000 books across America in summer 1941 alone. When authorities shuttered the German embassy, they found $3.5 million in cash, roughly $75 million today, still waiting to fund operations. Viereck weaponized America's free speech protections against democracy itself. Nazi agents bankrolled publications and radio stations, spreading a simple message: America was corrupt, Roosevelt was a warmonger, Jews were a menace. American allies, intellectuals, architects, religious leaders, and congressmen distributed over 3 million pro-German mailings under their own names. The operation ran in plain sight because democracies often protect the very speech that undermines them. Today's information warfare exploits the same vulnerability through foreign influence operations and coordinated disinformation campaigns. Philip Johnson stood mesmerized in Potsdam in 1932, watching Hitler address a Nazi youth rally. The Harvard-educated esthete who will design iconic American buildings had embraced Nietzsche's Übermensch, individuals beyond conventional morality. He compiled a secret list of 200 to 300 sympathizers for his Gray Shirts organization, an American counterpart to Hitler's Brown Shirts. Using his position at the Museum of Modern Art, Johnson worked to legitimize fascism among America's cultural elite. What made Johnson dangerous was his respectability. Friends dismissed him as flighty or harmless, just a wealthy dilettante. But Lincoln Kirstein, a Jewish contemporary, recognized the threat. Johnson wasn't alone. Lawrence Dennis, a former State Department official, emerged as America's leading fascist intellectual. These weren't marginalized outcasts, but educated elites with access to power. They moved comfortably in America's upper echelons, using their credentials to normalize fascist ideas. Johnson's later reinvention as America's architectural darling demonstrates how easily society forgives appealing packaging. When ideas come from people with the right pedigrees, we're dangerously willing to listen. By 1934, Huey Long had dismantled Louisiana's democracy while building a national Share Our Wealth movement with 8 million members. Unlike pure demagogues, Long delivered results: 2,500 miles of roads, 40 bridges, free textbooks, and state hospitals. His progressive tax proposal, 99% on wealth above $8 million, resonated during the Depression. But these achievements required destroying Democratic guardrails. Long controlled all elections, stacked government with loyalists, and operated like a mob boss. "I am the Constitution," he declared. Fascist intellectuals like Lawrence Dennis saw Long as America's potential strongman. Philip Johnson traveled to Louisiana in early 1935, fantasizing he might become the American Hitler. He found Long surrounded by armed thugs who beat photographer Leon Trice twice, once throwing him down marble stairs while Long stood by laughing. From his Art Deco capital, Long controlled Louisiana completely, collecting kickbacks while enjoying custom silk suits. By September 1935, he pushed legislation making it illegal for federal officers to exercise authority in Louisiana, the broadest defiance of federal authority since the Civil War. His assassination on September 8, 1935, left a troubling legacy. The Washington Post called him a forerunner of American fascism, noting his career epitomized the essential weakness of democracy, the pathetic willingness of the electorate to trust a glib tongue and a dynamic personality. In 1933, Nazi Germany studied America's Jim Crow laws for inspiration. Attorney Heinrich Krieger examined how over 30 states created legal frameworks for discrimination. Nazi scholars were fascinated by America's juridical Umwege, secret, twisting reasoning that circumvented constitutional equality. Despite the 14th Amendment, American courts had developed a bouillabaisse of artificial line drawing, privileging whites while maintaining legal appearance. American presidents long advocated racial separation. Jefferson and Lincoln hoped to deport black Americans. Woodrow Wilson resegregated federal workplaces. Calvin Coolidge signed radical immigration restrictions, warning against racial considerations too grave to be brushed aside. This approach directly influenced the 1935 Nazi Law for the Protection of German Blood and German Honor. Hitler admired how America conquered a continent and maintained white supremacy through legal mechanisms preserving equality's facade. Nazi lawyers explicitly cited American precedents when drafting discriminatory laws. This history challenges American exceptionalism. Rather than standing apart from authoritarianism, America's racial practices helped inspire it. The legal architecture America perfected, maintaining oppression within a nominally democratic framework, provided a blueprint the Nazis eagerly studied. Leon Lewis, a Jewish lawyer and WW veteran, built a counterintelligence network when authorities ignored Nazi threats in 1930s Los Angeles. LAPD Chief James Two Gun Davis dismissed him. Hitler's only trying to save Germany from the Jewish problem. The FBI compiled 2,000 cages on Charlie Chaplin while ignoring fascists. Lewis recruited non-Jewish veterans to infiltrate Nazi groups. His spies uncovered plots to hang prominent Jews and firebomb celebrities like Jack Benny and Charlie Chaplin. In April 1938, they found their smoking gun, correspondence revealing conspiracies linked to German consul Manfred von Killinger and plans to buy the Ku Klux Klan for $75,000, folding it into the American Nationalist Confederation, complete with Nazi swastika. Lewis embodied Tikkun Olam, repairing the world. His meticulous documentation eventually aided federal investigations, though he never received recognition during his lifetime. He proved that when institutions fail, citizens can defend their communities through disciplined resistance. When prosecutor O'John Raj brought sedition charges against 30 defendants in January 1944, the trial collapsed into farce. Elizabeth Dilling wore a gas mask. Defendants feigned illness. After 7 months and 3 million words of testimony, the trial ended when Judge Edward Eicher died in his sleep. Time magazine called it one of the most ludicrous fiascos in the history of U.S. jurisprudence. Raj spent 11 weeks in Germany examining captured Nazi documents, uncovering explosive evidence of Nazi infiltration, including connections to prominent isolationist Republicans. When he revealed Hermann Göring had confirmed Nazi efforts to influence the 1940 election, President Truman fired him. Key figures evaded justice. Philip Johnson dismissed his fascist past as youthful indiscretion and became a celebrated architect. Lawrence Dennis, born to a black mother and white father, had reinvented himself from colored boy evangelist to fascist intellectual. Father Charles Coughlin remained unrepentant about his anti-Semitic broadcasts decades later. America's failure to reckon with its fascist movement left a troubling legacy. The aborted trial and suppression of Raj's findings prevented full public accounting, allowing myths of American exceptionalism to persist, that fascism was purely European. The fascists of the 1930s failed not because democracy was invincible, but because ordinary people like Leon Lewis chose to fight. Democracy requires constant vigilance, courage, and willingness to confront uncomfortable truths.